Welcome back to From the Ground Up podcast. I'm your host, Michaela.
And I'm Abby.
And before we get started today, we're going to thank our sponsor, MarketBeat. MarketBeat is an amazing resource for creating the most accurate and comprehensive data sets while empowering more than 2.5 million investors to make better trading decisions by providing real-time financial data and best-in-class stock research tools. Whether you're looking for consistent dividend income or trying to find the next GameStop, MarketBeat has the objective information needed to analyze any stock. You can learn more about MarketBeat at http://marketbeat.com. All right, so we will get started. Our guest today is here with us, and his name is Nate Boskaljohn. Yes, cool, working on it, from Boskaljohn Design. So, hey, Nate.
Howdy.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Good.
It's Friday. The year one's getting around.
I know. It's like this rush to finish Friday to have the weekend, you know? It's good. So good. Would you, before we get into the real questions, just explain your business a little bit for us. Explain Boskaljohn Design.
Yeah, so I am a woodworking company. I build custom furniture. And we're also starting to build custom children's toys, so wooden children's toys as well. So we kind of do a whole gamut of anything made out of wood, we'll make it. So that's kind of the snippet of the business.
Awesome. So cool. And that's based here in Sioux Falls?
Based here in Sioux Falls. It's, yeah, like 5 minutes from here. So,
yeah. Cool. So did you grow up in Sioux Falls then?
I grew up in Brandon.
Okay. So not far.
Not far.
Okay. Awesome. How long have you been doing this business?
So I've been building furniture since 2016. It's been a business. It first started out as a different name. I recently changed the name to Boskaljohn Design Company. And that's been since the beginning of this year-ish. Yeah, so not very long in the new name, but rebranded to my last name to have a little bit more recognition.
Yeah, for sure. Well, before we learn more about that, we're going to do a little icebreaker. So,
what was your childhood dream job?
My childhood dream job was to be an oceanographer or a marine biologist.
Me too. Wow.
Yeah, that was my dream job. But I found out I would have to have a really cool job doing that. I'd have to be, by the ocean.
Yeah.
Not in, the South Dakota rivers. And so... I didn't really want to move away. I'm kind of a family guy. I like being around my family, so
yeah.
I knew I couldn't move to Cali or Florida or whatever. So
that's so funny. There was a solid 6 months of my life where I was determined to overcome the fact that I was from South Dakota and be an oceanographer. So that's cool. That's super cool.
Basically on a completely different spectrum. I was obsessed with soccer growing up. I played it for a long time. I wanted to be a soccer coach,
Nice.
That ended pretty quickly in high school. I didn't want to play soccer.
Yeah.
That'll stop you. So, yes. Well, will you go ahead and just tell us how you started your business, the overall story of it, from the ground up.
Yeah.
Our name. So how did that happen for you?
Yeah, for sure. So there's definitely a story I feel like most people have. So it was basically me scratching my own itch. And it was my wife and I were just graduating from college. We were thinking about buying our first home, but we needed some adult furniture. And so we went to all the big box stores that sell furniture, and we were kind of appalled by the prices. We were kind of appalled by the prices and the quality being fairly low. And so we left without any furniture because we didn't want to take out a second mortgage to have some furniture. And so my wife started sending me Pinterest how-tos and DIY stuff, you know? And so she figured I was handy enough to figure it out. And so in my father-in-law's garage, he had a couple tools that I basically brought wood to and borrowed. And I started making us furniture just because we needed furniture. And so... that's really how it all started. And then people would come into our place and say, where'd you get your furniture at? And I would be able to say, I built it. They're like, really? Could you build me a dining table, a coffee table? And so it just kind of started rolling like that. And then I was thinking about, I was saying, I'm either going to buy the wood and have them pay me for the wood and I'll make the table and I'll be a nice friend or family member and just like give them the table. I'll make it for them as long as they pay for the material. But then I was thinking, you know, if one person wants to buy a table for me, two people will buy a table for me, and that means 10 people will buy a table for me. And could this be a business? And so I decided to take it the business route. And I was starting to make enough pieces, and I wasn't like collecting sales tax. And at the time I was a financial advisor, and I didn't want an article about Nate Boskaldron in the news, financial advisor, tax evasion. You know, I didn't want like something like that coming up. And so I just thought it was like the right thing to do, to start collecting sales tax. And so the initial name was Tailored Woodwork, like a tailored suit, because I wore a suit every day as a financial advisor. So I thought it was clever. People always thought my name was Taylor.
Okay.
When I would tell them my name, even though maybe I just told them my name is Nate, but then they would meet me later and I'd refer to me as Taylor. So that's really why I changed the name, because I was sick of people like meeting me after they had met me and calling me Taylor and me having to be like awkwardly, like, that's not my name. Like, that's not even right. Like, so we bought a house. I completely outfitted our garage with my tools. I would do a project, buy another tool, do a project, buy another tool. And that's how I obtained all my tools that I have right now. And then last fall, we put a 20-foot extension on our garage to double my shop space, because I just had tools on top of each other, projects on top of each other. I just needed more room. And so my dad, brother-in-law, and a few friends from the ground up built the 20-foot extension. We poured the concrete, we dug the footings, we put up the walls, did the roof, we did everything. I have no background in construction, so it's just kind of like a cool thing to figure out.
Yeah.
So, and now I'm in a big-ish enough shop. You always like build the thing, and then you're always wishing like, oh, I should have bumped it out 5 feet, or I should have went like 100 feet back, or you know, I should have made it bigger. But it's where we are right now, and we're building stuff, and it's enough room, and tools have their room, and so that's kind of where we sit right now.
So it's literally a building from the ground up. Like you said, do you have other people building with you then, besides for when your family helped you with that?
So the only person that helps me in the shop right now is my wife. So we have a CNC machine, which is basically a robotic cutter head that cuts out designs. Mm-hmm. And so she's starting to run those types of machines. She's not willing to run the machines that can cut your hand off yet. So I can respect that. So I'm still the only one running those machines, trying not to cut off my fingers. And so she's the one that's helping sanding, running some of the machines, helping with kind of like the final finished product. Yeah.
What comparisons can you make between your life before starting this woodworking stuff and after?
Any particular comparisons, like to my professional life?
Well, that and like day-to-day routine, like
pace of life.
Yeah. So the pace of life before I was, like you said, a financial advisor. And so I was working for somebody else. So I, you know, a lot of my schedule was predicated on what I needed to do for the job that I wasn't the boss of. And so, I would, if I wanted to work out or go on a walk or go on a run in the morning, I'd have to wake up extra early to make sure I could get that done. Mm-hmm. So I could get in the office in time, kind of had an allotted time to take lunch. You were kind of told when to leave, when to show up. And so today, obviously, it's nothing like that. My wife and I take a 3-mile walk every single morning. It doesn't really, we wake up early, but it doesn't necessarily matter what time we wake up. There's always time for a walk. And so that's been nice. My wife and I both left our jobs in 2021. And so we're both super available with our schedules now. We're both kind of our own bosses, essentially. And so that's a significant difference. You know, we eat lunch together. So some people, like, I think, couldn't imagine going into business with their spouse. But it's made, I think, our relationship a lot closer, a lot more intimate, a lot better. And so those are some of the significant changes. I also, like, work a lot more now than I did before. Just because it's what I'm passionate about. It's like, I can't imagine, like, I'm kind of like, if I weren't doing this, like, I would literally just be, like, in my house scrolling on Instagram.
Yeah.
And that sounds like I'll do that, but It's just kind of like I would be out here. So it's not, it doesn't feel like work. It's kind of like cliche, but it's like it doesn't feel like work. Because I can't imagine what else I would be doing.
Yeah,
for sure.
It's so cool because we have talked in our previous podcast with someone. They were like, they basically said the same thing. They couldn't imagine themselves just like having time to sit through TV, but it's like good for them. Like they're happy that way. And it's so cool. And I also love how you said kind of the opposite of what people think, that you can like model this business with your wife and it's actually been good for you guys. And I think that's so cool for people to hear. Like you change your pace of life, you're working more, but you have time for walks. Like that's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's super beautiful.
Sure.
Yeah.
So then what kind of hopes do you have for Fossil Gems event in the future?
Yeah. So I love teaching. My mom's a kindergarten teacher going on like 40 years, about 40 years. And so I have a little bit of teaching blood in me.
Yeah.
And I get my handiness from my dad. So those are kind of the two strains that are coming together in this business. I have friends sometimes that are like handy-ish and will reach out to me and say, hey, I'm building a table, but I have like a couple questions on like this or that. Should I sand like this or should I cut it like that? You know, just like general questions that they just don't have the answer to that I, of course, do have the answers to. And so I love going like over to a friend's house and just like showing them how to do it.
Yeah.
And so I've done that a couple times with a couple of friends. So that's inspired my dream to have some type of storefront on like Phillips Avenue where I can hold like classes for people to come in and like build something, whether that's like they come in and build like a cutting board for themselves to take home, or whether it's somebody who's serious that wants to build a dining room table for themselves and they just need some instruction, they need the right tools. They need somebody that knows the next step because they might not. And then I would like that to be outfitted as my shop as well, to be kind of on Phillips Avenue, kind of, you know, it just seems super like trendy, like super cool, like to have like a shop on Phillips Avenue. So, and we have a lot of not that on Phillips Avenue, right? So it'd be like super duper unique.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where I would love for it to land eventually.
Do you see that being in like the near future or like a long-term goal?
So I have no idea how much it costs to rent up Phillips Avenue, like
right.
Storefront. So I think it's probably like maybe a, we'll call it a 5 to 10 year goal.
Okay.
Yeah, just because there's so much happening in downtown. So I think there's like so much opportunity. I feel like more connected than ever with downtown. We live pretty close to downtown. And so I think the opportunity will arise. It'll just be whether or not we are able to strike when the opportunity arises. So
yeah, you definitely can see that trend in Phillips, like these new things popping up, and it's so cool. So that'd be awesome. When you are working with your business clients who want to build a table or whatnot, what else do you build? Tables?
Yeah, any form of table. We're doing like a Halloween special right now where we are selling like jack-o'-lanterns, like cedar wooden jack-o'-lanterns.
Cool.
So they have like faces carved in the front of them and they're kind of like a porch, you know, front step type of thing.
We give
a little tea light, LED tea light that you can put on the inside of it and lights up at night and all that kind of stuff. So we're, that's kind of like something smaller and like seasonal that we're doing right now.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like furniture. I'm building a huge bed frame right now. Canopy style, 4-post bed frame. That's massive. And then we have, of course, our little cute like jack-o'-lanterns. So it's literally the entire spectrum right now.
No kidding. It's kind of cool because like kind of like the world is endless with wood because you can make anything, I guess. What does it look like when someone comes to you, like as a client? Like, what does that process look like? Do you, you're kind of talking about Instagram, how that kind of conflicted. Like, how does that work? How much say do they have? All that kind of thing.
Yeah. So the clients that I work with right now have a significant amount of say. So really what's happening right now is somebody will be in a Facebook group and they'll say, I want a door made, or I want a table made. Who knows somebody that can make a table? That's almost exclusively how I'm getting like all of my business right now. I know I'm thankful to like know enough people that know what I do, where I just get tagged in the comments. And so that's kind of like the marketing strategy that's just kind of happening naturally for me right now is word of mouth essentially is what it is. And so a client often gets referred that way. I either reach out to them, they reach out to me, and they usually send me some type of screenshot of like inspo that they got from Pinterest or Etsy or Google Images or whatever. And then they give that to me and I run with it and I try to like match it exactly to the pitcher. And so everything is like super duper custom, one of a kind, made to order type of vibe. And so we talk a lot about like what type of course wood they want. Do they want, the edge on the wood? Do they want it to be sharper? Do they want it to be rounded? What color do they want it to be? How tall do they want it to be? How many people do they want to be able to be around it? All the things that I think you would typically think about furniture, but some things that you might not think about, like, do you want to be able to disassemble it easily? Is it going to sit exactly where it is forever? Some of those things. So like, for example, the bed frame that I'm making is so massive that I can't walk it through the door.
Yeah.
And so it's gotta be, I have to assemble it on site. But if they move, they also have to be able to disassemble it to move it.
Yeah.
Right. So they might hire me to disassemble it when they need to move it. But like in the event they don't, I need to make it like simple enough so that they can like take it apart. Yeah. And they don't need like special tools or stuff like that. So, and then I always 3D sketch all my furniture to get like approval from the client so that I'm not starting to make something. And then they see a picture of it and they're like, that's not anywhere near what I was thinking about. So I started doing that with all my projects. It's just doing 3D modeling. I used to be in engineering as well. I don't have a degree in engineering, but I studied engineering for 3 years. So I have a little bit of that like nerdy numbers tech, like 3D drawing stuff, about me too.
Yeah. Is that how you learned to build these things? Or like, how did you like just start like building like all these different furniture?
I'm obviously good at math, right? So I can like read a tape measure. Most people like, I feel like can read a tape measure, I think. And so it's not like super math difficult.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of free plans on Pinterest, right? You can type in, we were outfitting our house with farmhouse furniture because that was like the trend when back in 2016, it was like kind of like coming alive, farmhouse was.
Yep.
And so it was just like, how to build a farmhouse coffee table. And like Anna White is a DIYer, like popular lady on Pinterest that has just like really super duper simple to follow designs. Like anybody could probably follow her designs and make themselves a table. And so that's literally what we were doing, is just going to Anna White's page on Pinterest and like typing in like bed frame, table, end table, coffee table. You know, she has instructions for everything, tells you exactly what you need to buy, exactly how to cut stuff. So you would just like do that, and then I eventually just learned the craft of understanding like, if I cut this piece this way, that's going to impact the piece over here, and that has to fit, you know, just like starting to think about like how is something put together.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know I had to have like kindergarten instructions, right? Yeah. To be like, cut this at 24, cut this at 36. You don't understand why, but just do it and it'll work. And so you eventually like learn the craft of understanding how stuff comes together. It doesn't seem maybe that complicated. Like maybe the table's not that complicated. It's got four legs in the top. Like chill out. But it's like it is fairly complicated. Every cut matters. You know, it's kind of like the measure twice, cut once. You know, kind of theory. You know, a wrong cut can be a kind of devastating thing. So
I would be nervous every movie. I don't know how to do that. I was like, OCD going on, like, no, I'm gonna get really short, all this stuff. Yes, this is cool.
Do you have any interesting stories from clients who work with, like, overly nice?
Let's think, do I have any client stories that are kind of crazy? One thing that comes to mind, and I might think of an actual story, but one thing that comes to mind is I am so nervous when I am either about to deliver a product or somebody's about to come pick up their product, because it's, I just imagine it, like, worst case scenario. I'm ahead of like it being, you know, the worst case scenario is like, I built them a dining room table and they wanted a door. Right. And just like, what is this? I paid you, bro. You know, and it's just going horrible. And so obviously that's never happened. But it's so nerve-wracking to have somebody like on their way to pick up their thing, and you're like, I hope I didn't screw this up. Like, I really hope I didn't screw this up. Yeah. I feel like I forget, honestly, like, maybe it's a good thing sometimes, like, forget about client stories, but I guess the craziest stuff that happens most is like some people have a timeline that all of a sudden arrives like in their world, and I need to like meet it without like having known about it before. And so that's super stressful when that happens, when somebody's like, oh no, take your time, like we're in no rush, it's good. And then they're like, hey, just so you know, like we're moving to Minnesota on Thursday, so like we're gonna need that table like tomorrow. And I'm like, oh, interesting. And so, you know, meeting demands like that is super crazy.
What?
Super crazy. That doesn't happen very often, but stuff like that can like arise. And you're like, oh, like this would have been nice to know at the beginning, but here we are. So you try to meet that demand and work overload and not sleep and, you know, that sort of stuff. Try to meet those sort of demands. But
if you did get that storefront, do you think you'd come across those kinds of people more often?
I think if I had my storefront, I would hope at that point I have more of like a catalog of products.
Yeah.
That's one thing I don't have that I would like to have in the future, is to have somebody be able to come to me and say, hey, I don't have a picture for you, but I would like a dining room table. And I could say, I have these 5 designs that are like exclusive Bosco John Design Company designs. You can pick one of the 5. It can be as big as you want, as small as you want, whatever height. You get to customize those features, but this is like the kind of like the fundamental design of it. Mm-hmm. That way, there's a little more control in my court than it is in their court, where they're just like clicking the buttons and I kind of know how it's going to go down. So that's what, when I get my storefront, that's what I would like to have, is more pieces to just like to buy, right? Because I don't have inventory right now. I don't have, people couldn't show up at my shop and be like, I want that end table over there.
Yes.
Because everything is literally made to order. So outside of the jack-o'-lanterns, I guess.
Right.
You
know. But there is something super cool about that, but like I feel like that could get out of hand too. Like you don't feel like you have to control all the time. So yeah. So each product seems like it'd be so unique. I love that. What are some decisions like within this time of your business that you've made that have proven to be very successful for you? Like what do you like that you would keep going forward, like with a shop or something?
Mm-hmm. So the obvious one is the shop addition. That was a really, really good decision. I made the decision right before construction lumber prices skyrocketed. And so I hadn't bought my lumber yet. And lumber skyrocketed back at the beginning of COVID. And so I had to make a decision like, okay, my build cost just doubled. Do I do it and say, suck it up, Nate? Or do I wait and see if this lumber situation figures itself out quickly? And so the story is the lumber situation didn't figure itself out quickly, it just got worse. And so I just pulled the trigger and said, I'm just going to suck it up and do it, which I was thankful for now with a little bit of hindsight because the problem just got worse. I actually got a pretty good deal on my lumber, although it doubled from what I was planning on it being. So that was a really good decision to just like act quickly and just say, this was my plan. Yes, there's a hurdle. I would be silly to not expect hurdles and stuff like this. And so just being able to jump over the hurdle and say, we're just going to keep moving.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting one. I think the other one was when we bought our CNC machine, which again is the robotic cutter head that cuts out the faces of our jack-o'-lanterns. You know, I can make custom name signs for like a nursery. I'm cutting out 2 name puzzles for like children. So we like cut out the name. It's like a little board, has little letters that you put in the spots. It's kind of like not really a puzzle necessarily, but I put the thing in the slot and call it good. So that was a big, that's the most expensive tool in the shop. And so it was a big investment, but it opens the doors for us to do virtually anything.
Yeah.
So, 2 good decisions.
That opened up a whole new world with that. That's so cool.
When you have to make those kinds of decisions, like what kind of thought process or like what do you do to help you make that decision ultimately?
Yeah. So I think so far, I don't know if I would call myself hard-headed, but when I get an idea that isn't like super crazy or ridiculous and I want to do it and I know it's like reasonable, it's pretty hard for anybody to talk me out of it. And so I think it's just like a probably more of a characteristic trait that if I know I can do something and I know it's semi-reasonable, the likelihood of me doing it is very, very high. And I think how I get to that point is, you know, I am a numbers guy, right? So I'm like running, if I'm going to buy this and see it. Am I going to buy it outright? Am I going to finance it? What are the payments going to be? Is that stupid? Should I buy it outright? Do I need to do two more projects to like get it? Do I need to wait? Am I being impatient? So just like trying to be self-aware, I think is probably the word that we can pull out right now. It's just like being self-aware of like, what are my circumstances right now? Can I support what I'm about to do? Mm-hmm. And if so, then why wouldn't I do it? Yeah. If I don't have a reason why not, then why wouldn't I do it? That's mm-hmm. I guess that's probably how I make most of my decisions is if I can't think of a reason why not, then why wouldn't you? And I think that's a good way to think about a lot of things in life, right? Mm-hmm. Like if you're an employer and an employee asks you for something and you don't have a reason why you wouldn't do it, then why wouldn't you do it, yeah. Right? And so I think I make a lot of decisions like that because otherwise you're kind of a jerk, right? if somebody's like, hey, can I have this? And you're like, no. They're like, why not? And you're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right? You're kind of like a jerk at that point, yeah. Right? So, so I think it's a good way to make a lot of decisions in life.
What does your wife really think about that system? Decision making.
Yeah, that's a great question. So obviously, you know, like me buying tools all the time is kind of like a running joke in the woodworking community. Like, but you know, I'm not gonna be able to think of one of the memes now. But like, it's you know, just jokes about how you don't tell your wife about the tool you just bought because
like the red green show.
Yeah. And so it's just kind of like you're always. You know, people are always like hiding their new tool purchase from their wife. Like, oh, I bought this 5 years ago, honey. You just haven't seen it yet. You know, like I didn't buy this yesterday. And so, you know, that's of course a running joke. My wife supported me surprisingly with the CNC machine. So I had been talking about it for a while and had been researching like which machine I wanted to get, why I wanted to get that specific machine, what my different options were, how much it was going to cost, all this stuff. And so she, like, obviously we're married, so our money's together, but, like, she, like, helped pull the trigger on it with mm-hmm. me, like, because she knew I really, really wanted it, but I was kind of at that stage where I was, like, am I being impatient? Do I need to just wait a little bit longer? But it was, like, kind of like a joint Christmas present, like, 2 years ago where we were just, like, it's Christmas, they happen to be having a little bit of a special on the machine, mm-hmm. We've been talking about it for a long time, like, we're just going to pull the trigger, mm-hmm. and so, There's a lot of woodworking auctions that happened in the last 2 years. And so, like, a cabinet shop will, like, shut down in Minneapolis, and they'll auction off all the tools, all the lumber, and you can get stuff for dirt cheap. And so my brother-in-law and I would go up to Minneapolis to participate in these auctions. And I was able to get a boatload of wood for basically nothing and some machines for some used machines for very, very cheap as well. And so... You know, she would always kind of like have the proverbial eye roll, you know, when I was telling her I was going to another auction and another auction, another auction, right? That's kind of her job, I guess.
Yeah.
But, it was just the nice thing about the auctions is you like often had to pay in cash. So like, unless I had the cash to pay for my stuff, like I wasn't going, right? Yeah. So it was kind of like, you know, you can of course get in trouble in those circumstances where you just like buy much stuff and you're like, okay, well, we have a credit card, but you couldn't. That like wasn't an option at these auctions. Right. So I always had to have like the cash to back up my actions. Mm-hmm. So that helped me like not overspend or something like that. Cause I knew I had to like literally go to the bank and take out cash and bring it with me to the cities. So that was definitely helpful for me and her that I like had to actually have some money to back up what I was about to do.
Are you, before we move on to the next question, are you and your wife very similar in the way that you go about the business if you have different aspects that balance out each other?
Yeah, so my wife is super duper creative, mm-hmm. and so I'm creative as well, but she's significantly more creative than I am. I am, you know, more math technical focused, and so that's probably kind of why we play the roles we do. I see her eventually grasping onto like design for the furniture. She's not doing that right now, but she's definitely creative enough to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just understanding the mechanics of the furniture. It's kind of like having, let's say, like a designer or like an interior designer designing something, but like the architect or the engineer has to like make it happen.
Yeah.
Right. And so like that relationship between those two is really important because you can't have like somebody making crazy stuff and the architect's like, bro, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't care. Right. Yeah. And so I see her eventually stepping deeper into that design role and me just continuing to get more technical with my craft.
Yeah.
She is extremely introverted. I am extremely extroverted. So we're, that's probably like the characteristic that I would pull up the most, that we are most opposite. And so we balanced each other out significantly there. She's become a little bit more extroverted because of me. I've become a little bit more introverted because of her. And so that's been a really good thing too.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, Nate, you've given us the listeners a bunch of awesome stuff so far. So we'll give you a bit of a break to shout at our sponsor again, MarketBeat. MarketBeat is an online research tool that allows its users and investors to find real-time financial data and best-in-class stock research tools. No matter what you're looking for or when you're looking for it, MarketBeat has everything you'll need to come out on top. You can take a look for yourself at MarketBeat.com.
Oh, thank you, Abby. So, yeah, kind of switching gears, but not really, along the same lines. What do you think are some of the good qualities of a good entrepreneur?
An entrepreneur yourself.
Yeah, I think I was having a similar conversation with a couple of people at the Innovation Expo that was yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think the interesting thing about being an entrepreneur right now is that it's like super duper cool. Right? It's like super cool to be an entrepreneur, yeah. Super cool to call yourself a founder, super cool to call yourself the CEO of XYZ right now, where it wasn't that way, you know, 20 years ago, where you were kind of a loser if you were like an entrepreneur. That's kind of how the world worked, and now you're an athlete essentially, right? When you're an entrepreneur. And so I think the word that comes to my mind again is self-awareness. Because entrepreneurship is so cool right now, there are probably too many people who think they are entrepreneurs but aren't.
Right.
And so I think that's been something I want to be really thoughtful about, because it's not helpful for me or my family if I'm trying to be an entrepreneur. I'm not actually an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. It's not helpful. I would do much better in an organization being an employee if I'm not. And so I think what makes a good entrepreneur is actually taking the time and understanding yourself and understanding whether or not you are an entrepreneur, mm-hmm. and not being romantic about the idea that it's cool right now.
Yeah.
Because it's not going to go well if you're not an entrepreneur and you're trying to be one. It's just not going to go well. You're going to hurt a lot of people. You're going to hurt your own finances. Yeah. You're going to go through a lot of like probably mental health challenges because of the lack of success that like you're going to ultimately have. So I think like being able to sit with yourself and truly understand, like, is the thing that I'm trying to chase, is it inside of me, right? Like, can I make this happen?
Yeah.
Me. And so, cause they talked a lot about at Innovation Expo yesterday about the founders, right? Like the people that run these organizations, these startups, is kind of all about the person. Right. The company can be a legit idea, but if the person can't like pull out the actions that need to happen to make this thing work, it doesn't matter. It could be a really cool idea, but if like the person can't make it happen, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so I think just like sitting with yourself and like asking yourself that actual question, because it's a hard question to digest. A lot of people don't know, and a lot of people, because it's cool, they don't even want to like think about it. They're like, they might not want to know the real answer. And so I would say that's the biggest thing that makes an entrepreneur an entrepreneur, is like being able to like passionately say, like, I've thought about this, I know my idea is going to work, and I know I'm going to work in my idea to make it work, and having no doubts about it. I think it's something that a good entrepreneur should be striving to do all the time.
Like deep intrinsic motivation, not just
the
cool romantic idea of it.
Yeah, I think another thing I would add is understanding why you're doing it, right? A lot of people, it's kind of like everyone's caught on now, but like 2, 3, 4 years ago, when everyone, right, was flashing their watches and Lamborghinis, and nobody really like knew, they're like, oh, like they must have not rented that Lamborghini, like they must be really successful. So I wonder, you know, there's a lot of like that sort of stuff coming to the surface where people were getting into it because of that, right? They wanted to be like, if only I were a successful entrepreneur, I could buy a Rolex. If only I was a successful entrepreneur, that's the only way I can get a nice car, right? So like understanding like why you're doing it, understanding like, am I getting into this for like the objects that I think it's going to give me? Or am I like doing this because I can't think of doing anything else?
Wow, that's so cool. Like if you were to take, obviously money is a huge part of it, but like your actual craft is like this beautiful craft that you love to do. And that's like, would you say that's part of the intrinsic motivation for you.
Yeah.
You love doing it.
Right. Obviously, money is super important. Like, yeah. people gotta pay their mortgage.
Yeah.
Like, it's important to have, like, a sustainable model that actually, like, pays for your lifestyle. But if it's the main driver, it's questionable in my head on whether it's the right decision or not.
Yeah.
My craft, there's, you know, a million woodworkers who are a lot better than I am on, like, Instagram that I follow. There are some beginners that I'm helping bring up on Instagram. I feel like I'm on Instagram a lot, and that's, like, where a good woodworking community is. But it is, the aspiration of, like, seeing somebody do something and being like, I know I can do that.
Yeah.
But I know my skills aren't, like, at that level, but I know I can do that. And just being able to, like, spot, like, there's always, like, another thing to do. It's kind of like, I can't think of another. Most professions are like, you'll never know everything. You'll never be able to do everything. You're never, like, the expert at everything, right? In financial planning, the world I was in before, like, tax laws were always changing. Like, you could never know everything. And it's kind of the same thing in woodworking. There's always the next thing to do. So it's just kind of like chasing the craft. Like, that's all part of the process of knowing there's, like, another step. You're never going to, like, get to the end of it necessarily. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Is there some other, like, people in the world around you who are entrepreneurs that have really had influence on you going forward with this business?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think the startup community in Sioux Falls is really good right now, but it's on its way to be literally really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a part of a program called Co-Starters with Startup Sioux Falls. And so it's just basically an accelerator program for entrepreneurs who either have an idea, or haven't flushed it out yet, or maybe have a side hustle that they would like to be a full-blown business, or maybe even have a business that they just, like, want to take to the next step. And so I participated in a program like that with a lot of other aspiring or entrepreneurs already. And so that was good just to be around a lot of people with the same type of, like, mindset, people who could hold you accountable to, like, real stuff, who they've been there and done that. I have a hard time taking advice from people who haven't been there and done that personally. And so it was good to be around people who were, like, doing the thing.
Yeah.
So that was super duper helpful. They're actually taking applications right now. Co-Starters, Startup Sioux Falls, highly recommend it. So that was a thing. And then I also am a part of this program called Leaders of Tomorrow, which is run by Think3D. And so they have this program where they're trying to develop 500 really, really good leaders in Sioux Falls, right?
Yeah.
And so I think they just closed their applications, but they're always taking applicants too. Would highly recommend that too. But so those have been two avenues that have really helped me, like, dig deep into that question that I was talking about earlier. Am I doing this because I want to be cool? Or am I doing this because this is because I can't imagine doing anything else?
Yeah.
Really having people, like, hear me talk and then saying, like, I think you're full of crap, or this sounds like you can't imagine doing anything else, so you should go do it.
Yeah.
You know, getting that push either direction has been super helpful. And obviously I got the push to, like, go do it. And have had a ton of support. Market B, you know, the sponsor, Matt Paulson, is a huge part of the startup community. So really appreciate Matt and all the stuff that he's doing, because he has created kind of the foundation along with a couple other people in the community to, like, make our startup community, like, one of the best in the region. So
yeah, that's so cool. And, like, that's why we're doing that podcast, is, like, this podcast to make people aware, like, there is a community for them right here if they want to, like, walk into that and do those things, like, learn their motivation, learn how to be a leader, all of that. So do you want to say those two things you mentioned again?
Yeah. So the first one that's actively taking applications right now is Co-Starters.
Okay.
With Startup Sioux Falls. And then the second one was Leaders of Tomorrow, which is with run by Think3D.
Yeah. Awesome. We got to work with Think3D last year in another class we're doing. So
yeah.
I love watching the connections. The more we go into another class with Shelly, another class at USF, so cool. Like, it's really out there, the startup community. So
yeah.
Nice.
Is there anything on like the legal business side of owning your business that you didn't expect to see?
There was one thing that was a huge pain in the butt, which was changing my name.
From Taylor
to actually Nate, but no, going from Taylor Woodwork to Moscow John Design Co. That I definitely wasn't expecting how hard it was going to be. I was kind of like, my brother is a videographer, so he helped me like put together this really super cool, kind of promo video for the name change that I was going to drop when I like had all my ducks in a row. And I kind of thought like, oh, I can just go on the state website. I can just like do their paperwork that they need me to do, pay the fee, whatever. They'll change it. It'll be dope. We'll be good to go, right? And I got on the website and like had a couple of questions. And obviously I probably could have like hired an attorney to like ask these questions too, but they seemed like elementary, like they seemed Googleable, right? So I was like trying to like Google them. And then I like tried to call the state office and like just ask them like what I thought were some pretty rudimentary like questions.
Yep.
And you know, I understand where they were coming from. They kind of gave me the Heisman, like the stiff arm, right? Of like they can't give me advice. Basically, they can't answer my questions because it would be counted as advice or whatever. And so I was like super frustrated because I was like, I don't want to hire somebody for these like Googleable questions, but I can't find them on Google. Can't get on the phone with this person that won't answer my questions. Yep. And so it's just kind of like, I'm never going to be able to change my name. It's kind of one of those moments where I was like, I don't know what I'm going to do outside of like hiring. I really don't want to do that.
Yeah.
This just seems like way too simple for that. Nothing against attorneys, but I just like was not trying to do that. And so I think I talked to another business owner and I was like, hey, I know you changed your name from this to this. Like, and I probably should have started there.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. How do I do this? But I ended up going to somebody that had done it and just was like, I am not doing something right and I'm not finding anybody to talk to that's willing to give me like free advice. And so they helped me out and got it done. And it was easy once I knew what I was doing, but it was super difficult while I didn't know what I was doing. And so that was kind of a legal thing. Starting the LLC was pretty straightforward comparatively. When I first did it, I was kind of like panicked that I was going to screw something up. But I presumably did it right, I think, because I can put LLC behind my name.
And, right.
The state has like sent me correspondence about how I'm legit. So I think I did it right. that was a lot easier than what I went through to change my name. So those are like the two things that.
Yeah.
Like I've dealt with from a legal standpoint. So
yeah. Is there any other lessons that you've come across that you want to get to?
Yeah, I think there's no such thing as too much communication, especially like from the business owner to the client. Obviously we expect clients to be super communicative with us. But I think the way you foster that is by over communicating stuff. And so that's something that, because there can't ever be enough communication, that's something I'm actively pursuing is like, how do I include them, enough on this, but not so much that they're like they're changing stuff on me all the time. But how do I like involve somebody enough where they feel like they're in the loop, that they like understand what's going on. I don't want, you know, to put people, make people feel like they're out of the loop, especially when I'm building like expensive furniture for them, right? They pay me half upfront and half when I'm done. And there's a lot of like limbo time of like, I paid you this much money and I like haven't heard anything from you. Did you run with my money? Right? Because there's like stories of contractors like get work and run with people's money. And so like, obviously that's a super legit concern for certain people. So I would say like as a business owner, something super duper simple to have like word of mouth spread incredibly quickly is either be a really good communicator or be a really bad communicator, right? Both of those things will give you significant word of mouth very quickly. So,
yeah. I have so many more questions now about just like the craft of like building things and all of those details. And I think there's something so cool about what you're doing, just like customly building for people. And I do think you just stand out in like a lot of different fields. And I think it's you just dropped some mad wisdom today. So thank you for that. We are coming to the end of our time, but I know we can go on. But That being said, thank you for coming today. Is there anywhere that if someone's listening to this and they're like, hey, I want a pool table or a bed frame, like, they should reach out to you?
Yeah. No, I appreciate you having me on today. It's been really fun. Yeah. I wish, we could go another hour too.
Yeah, seriously, though.
So you can find me almost anywhere if you type in Bosco John Design Company. Or Bosco John Design Co. Or probably just my last name, to be quite frank.
Yeah.
You can find me on Facebook, on Instagram. That's where I'm most active. I also have a really cool website, too, that I designed somehow. But it's a really cool website, I think. Maybe it's because I designed it. But it's BoscoJohnDesignCo.com. So you'll be able to find all the things to get a hold of us in one of those three avenues.
Cool. Thank you so much again, Nate. We are going to close this out by doing one more thank you to our last sponsor, who has gifted to you through us a Sunny's Pizzeria gift card, which you'll find in here. Sunny's is a locally owned pizza place right next to USF, University of Sioux Falls. On the corner of 26th and Waltz Ave. They're passionate about helping the city of Sioux Falls, and we're very eager to help us out. They pride themselves on their kindness, compassion, and relaxed atmosphere, and hope that you can feel good about your money spent at Sunny's, going right back to the community. Come check out some interesting and compelling specialty pizzas at this family-owned neighborhood pizzeria. It's super good. So, that's our shout-out to Sunny's. Thank you again, Nate, and this is the end of our episode for this week.